Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Clump and Shock Entertainment Report. It is Truth Thursday. Truth Thursday. Yes. And we are continuing our discussion on America and the world elite. So I thank you for tuning in. I am Beth, a.k.a. Be True. And remember to send emails to clumpandshockinc_Beth@yahoo.com. That's KulturShockEnt_Beth@yahoo.com. Culture Shock Entertainment, KulturShockEnt_Beth@yahoo.com. And thrice, because I have to hear things three and four times. KulturShockEnt_Beth@yahoo.com. And also, thank you for showing support via Cash App, $Beth, B-E-T-H, B-T-R-U, K-U-L-T-U-R-E-S-H-O-K. Cash App, $Beth, B-E-T-H, B-T-R-U, K-U-L-T-U-R-E-S-H-O-K, Beth, B-E-T-H, B-T-R-U, K-U-L-T-U-R-E-S-H-O-K. Thank you so much for your love and your support. If you're a longtime listener from March 2011 or new now, thank you for your love and your support. I feel your vibes. I appreciate your show ideas. I appreciate you calling in. 516-595-8255. And appreciate you for accepting my love. Again, you're listening to Culture Shock Entertainment Report right here on Blog Talk Radio.
Wow. Because I would have hit that ass in front of the house. Right. I would have hit y'all with that. See, I would have hit y'all with that. Right.
Yes, okay. Thank you. Thank you all for tuning in. Someone told me they're living in New Orleans. That's good news. Definitely for probably one that works in restaurants. But, yeah, I posted a lot of research that I had been doing. But since I was a child, I've always been interested in the elite and the Illuminati, as Cousin Linda and I have been talking about recently, and elite families of the world. And the richest family in America and the world happens to be the Waltons family from, you all know, Wally World, Walmart, a place that some of us love and some of us love to hate, in Cousin Linda's words. But I like to do lists, as you all know that, so I am pulling up my list, which it was pulled up, then it dropped off. And I know many of my listeners I know are part of the elite, so of the world and of America. So do not hesitate to call in. And I thank everybody from all forms of life for your support of Custom Shock Entertainment Report right here at Blog Talk Radio. Okay, so before I get started on the list, I'm going to read an interesting article from The Economist, The Making of America's Elite. And Cousin London texted me, I thought she would be on the show. Okay. I'm thinking she would be on the call waiting to be put on mic, and she and others text me when all you have to do is call the call-in. Call-in number to talk. Okay. The Economist. Before we get started, I know Cousin Linda's going to come from a whole other angle. I just always been fascinated with the elite families of the world, and also as I research, also Illuminati comes up often also. But I know many of our elite families are not a part of the Illuminati, but some of the things that we hear about some are probably true. But I love to do lists, so I run down the list of the America's top elite families, which we all know. The Walton family, as I said earlier, they're the richest and the most elite in America and the world. The Making of America's Elite, this is from The Economist, a and new paper qualifies the boost that students with rich parents get when applying to the best universities. So that's an article that happened happened on July 24th, happened a couple of days ago regarding the privileges that rich students, the students of the elite get. So I will reshare that. And it's talking about that 6% of American undergraduates attend colleges that accept less than a quarter of the applicants, leaving the vast majority unaffected. Moreover, most academic analysis of the socioeconomic impact of bachelor's degree from highly selected colleges have failed to qualify just what is that they add. So that is just one of the headlines that's up for this week regarding what's happening with the elite. And my apologies, text messages and phone ringing when it is promoted that the show starts at 11, but we're working on the consistency of the show because everybody's not aware also. But the person that kept calling is aware that they should call in and not call my cell phone. So my apologies. Not knocking out the kinks, getting Custer Shark Entertainment Reports back to what you all loved about it, the funness and the consistency and the many guests and awesome topics. Please continue to suggest awesome topics also and call in. And we appreciate you all that support the show. Oh, and thank you to all the callers. Thank you. My cousin Linda is on. And so I'm going to open the mic for her because I know she has some very interesting things to talk about, even from the information that Brother Warren shared with us a few weeks ago from that website. There's so much information provided and amazing documentaries to view. And Cousin Linda did more extensive research on that website than I did, but I did reshare a lot of information a couple of weeks ago from that particular website regarding who's really running America and the world. These elite families, because they run some of the top, most of the top companies are dynasties in the world, you know? So let's play a little more music, and then we will open the mic to Cousin Linda, and I will go to run down through my list, and also Cousin Linda will talk from her angle. Hopefully Brother Warren will call in also, and some of you will call in at 516-595-8255. Again, thank you so much for your love and your support. Also, sending our condolences to fellow fans of Sinead O'Connor, who we lost at age 56. Oh, man, and wow. And so you all know I've been a fan of hers since the top one. When I first heard the beginning of her song, I'm like, wait a second. That's nothing compared to you, because you all know I know my Prince music. And just a big shout-out to fellow fans as we mourn the loss and send the condolences to her children. And, you know, she lost a son last year, and now her children are mourning the loss of their mother. And she was definitely a controversial artist also. But, you know, one thing I liked about Sinead O'Connor, too, was that we talk about purpose. She went through life seeming as if she really knew her purpose, and being open and being transparent about her life, the ups and the down and the dark side of her life. So sending out condolences and love to all of us who loved her and her children especially. Okay. Yes, I love that. Thank you, Pixie D, for that beautiful music. You all music, great, good music. Go to Pixie D for your projects and all, you know, for podcasts, for filming, for your film projects, definitely. Big shout-out to Pastor Dunn, Junior CEO. Thank you for your support, you and your winning team. Thank you to Jay Clark's Novelty, Vin and Chat, a new show here on Blog Talk Radio that tunes in and chats with us in the chat room. Thank you to Ms. Inez, who's part of Pastor Dunn, Junior CEO. Thank you to the United States, our native United States. Thank you for your loving support. Turkey, which is the second listening country, Finland, Canada, Bangladesh, and Brazil, Romania, and China. Thank you to everybody near and far, Jackson, Dallas, Fort Worth, all everywhere, every small rural town. My family, loved ones in Tacoma, right there at the border of Oklahoma, north of Dallas, Sherman, Texas. I have to shout them out. I know y'all loving it. Big shout out to everyone of places I've never been, places that Cousin Linda got to go because I want to go again her second or third time. Big shout out to all of you. If you're in a mansion or if you are living off the land, thank you for your love and support in every town, city, village, island. Thank you. Even the astronauts that are above us. I hope you do listen to Blog Talk Radio and include Culture Shock Entertainment Reports on your list. Big shout out to our former military men who are bravely and coming out telling us about the unidentified and things that some of us suspect that is happening. We want to know the truth. I know some of us, well, I don't want to know the truth, but I honestly, when I was a little girl, my mother, my sister, and I, we seen a UFO. I know you all been hearing the stories at the beginning of the show in 2011, but it happened yesterday when I think about it. Even when my late mother and I used to talk about it right before she passed, I mean, like in recent days, she even said it seemed, even my sister, you asked my sister, she was, something about the memory of seeing a UFO, it's as if it just happened. So those of you, we're going to talk about all of this in the near future. And Cousin Linda listens to Coast to Coast. Coast to Coast goes deep into all of that UFO sightings. I need to start back listening to Coast to Coast because Coast to Coast always goes deep into UFO sightings and so on. So we definitely need to talk about that. And also, yesterday we didn't get a chance to talk much about world climate. I shared a lot about the climate change. So this is that's a continued conversation also. So we're talking about the Elite Truth Thursday. I'm going to pass the mic to Cousin Linda. And also, as she's talking, I was prepared to talk about my list of the elite families of America and the world. But I have no idea what angle Cousin Linda's coming from, so I love surprises. So let's do this. Let's do this. Much for your love and your support.
Am I on?
Yes.
You usually would say something about the mic. Hello, cousin and listeners all around the world and here in the States. And surprise, 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 because I thought today was Traveling Thursday, and I'm hearing about I'm hearing you talk about elite families and climate change and global warming, so I don't know where to begin. What do you want me to talk about?
Oh, talk about what you have researched from with the information that Brother Warren had shared with us.
About
because we're still on that series. Yes.
Friday,
we'll talk about the passport.
Okay, from what Brother Warren was telling us about families that rule America, I heard you clearly and succinctly discuss certain families in the country actually rule America. And I don't think it's a secret. Maybe a lot of people don't want to admit it because they can't believe that. They know in their heart, but they kind of just deep down inside don't want to believe that, because when we're in school, it's drummed into us that the United States is a democracy of the people, by the people, and for the people, and no one person or no superior people make decisions. What happens in this country is supposed to be determined by a plurality or the majority of people. But I don't think it takes a rocket scientist to know that with political contributions come favors. We've seen that recently with our Supreme Court justices. We've seen it with favorable rulings for certain families and certain corporations. When it's time for regulation, they seem to get the benefits, and the little people, it's kind of like, you know, forget y'all. You don't contribute to my campaign. You don't contribute to this political party, so we don't owe you any favors. However, when it's time to get your vote, here come the politicians kissing babies, eating hot dogs, you mentioned the Neshoba County Fair, and all of that is
right.
A part of campaigning for certain political offices. So
right.
I've always repeated what I was told: he who owns the gold makes the rules. The wealthy families in this country may not directly say, I'm going to tell you what to do, but they do have the ear of a politician that they donated money to. If I'm not mistaken, there used to be limits on political contributions, but I think it was a Republican president who changed all that. You know, you can give money anonymously. You can give way more than the limit. So if you want your business to be treated favorably in your eyesight, well, you're going to contact your local politicians, and they're going to vote the way that you want them to vote. It's like, I don't want my business or my corporation to have to pay taxes, drum up some kind of legislation, whereas we don't have to do it. And you've seen evidence of that. You know, if you watch the news, you see that corporations don't pay taxes, and if they do, it's very little, but the politicians find ways to tax little people. Either it's sales taxes or municipal taxes, you know, city taxes. We'll raise the rate on parking meters, just any kind of thing. We can raise the rate without any repercussions on your license plates, and just all kinds of ways
right.
that they can tax little people and collect money that way, whereas politicians are getting big money. A lot, 'cause one of my friends asked me, why is so-and-so running for president when they know they're not going to win? I'm like, I don't think the intent is to win. It's all the perks that
right.
you get running for president of the United States. And
good
a lot
point.
Of that campaign funding, you know, if you don't have to report it, you can keep it. If you do get elected to certain offices, when that politician calls and they just say, well, how about if I pay your kids 4-year tuition at so-and-so college? Or what about if I send them to so-and-so private academy? Would you and your missus like to take a trip to Bali, all expenses paid, aboard a private jet? And,
right.
of course, the politician is going to use their influence to take care of that donor. So that is my take on who actually runs America. It's not the little
wow.
average voter.
And we're taught the power is in the vote. Right. And
yeah.
you make a good
yeah.
point, because being a student of business since I was a child, you're right, business expert to the day, and I still haven't done that. They advise First thing you need to do is turn yourself into an LLC or a, I'm still a sole proprietor. But the first thing they tell us, business mentors and experts, and you know it. I know you've been a businesswoman. You know it. That's how many beat the system. You're right, without paying taxes or paying small amounts of taxes by becoming companies and corporations. Because these families are corporations, so you make a good point. But we're told the power's in the vote. The power's in the vote, but we cast our vote, and it seemed like your power is just as big as you are. That's what it seems, and we think that it's a collective effort of power for the people, but. What you're saying and what we actually witnesses and experiencing is the power is for certain people.
You know, I've discussed with you our education system and how we're not taught to think, and how I did not actually learn to think until I attended Jackson State College and switched my major from biology to social science. And social science, in a lot of instances, is a subjective discipline. You can read something and what it's saying, but you can also think about it. Whereas in mathematics, 2 + 2 is going to be 4, or 2 times 0, 0 or whatever. But in the social sciences, it's a lot of thinking, communicating with people, getting their opinions, giving your opinions, doing a lot of research and looking at so-called authorities and experts, and you say, okay, this is what so-and-so said, but I don't agree with that. So that's what I say when I learned how to think, because when I was in school, and a lot of people listening in the United States may have had to do the same thing we had to do. We had to learn Lincoln's Gettysburg Address. We had to learn to recite it. We didn't dissect it word for word or sentence by sentence. We just had to memorize it and repeat it before the class. That was normal. I didn't realize until I went to Jackson State when one of my instructors said, and when you go on the field or when you start teaching, don't have your students memorize the Gettysburg Address. Because why? Why do you have a student just standing up reciting something? And when I was in an English class, this English teacher had us memorize the poem that's on the Statue of Liberty. And she would always put emphasis, all men are created equal, and that's the way she wanted us to say it. When I was in school, it was a Jim Crow segregated South. And everybody knew that we were separate and unequal. But you're not taught to think that. They don't tell you to think this. It's memorized. And I mean, you were heavily graded. If you couldn't remember it, you got a D or an F, or if you said it the way the teacher wanted you to say it, word for word, verbatim, you got an A. And when I look back on it, I criticize the social science department instructors. I hated them, and they hated me for the most part. But they were right. I have to give it to them. They were right. Learn to think. Don't just accept something because this is what you were taught in school. What's the point in your memorizing a poem or a speech or something that really has no significance to you? And I don't think we can tell students that now, certainly not in those terms, with this CRT, wokeism, Black Lives Matter. Everybody is hating, well, not everybody, but a lot of people are hating on that. And my thing is, you just don't want us to know our history because you're afraid of what will happen if we know our history and if it's taught to certain people. Because I don't know about you, Bethany, but when Roots came out, there were a lot of young kids who did not know anything about slavery, black kids. And I'm just amazed because it wasn't discussed.
And I was a little girl.
Yeah,
and you all taught me to read books. Y'all made sure I had black history books when I was, for it seemed like from time of birth. You all had black history books and taught black history to me.
Yeah, and I got firsthand knowledge, word of mouth of this is how it was. So and so great grandmother in the family was a slave and what have you. So I got it from his mouth on how people were treated.
Right.
And then when I was 7 or 8 years old, we had Emmett Till's murder. And I saw that picture of him in the.
I wonder how old you were. I wonder what. How old were you?
Oh. Yeah, I was 7 or 8 years old, and I remember it being discussed at Grandmother Maddie's house, and my mother was debating whether or not, or contemplating whether or not she should show me that picture. And she decided to show me the picture of Emmett Till.
Oh, my goodness.
And his face and how he looked in the coffin. And this is the state you live in Mississippi. So I knew at a very young age that we were not all treated equally. We may have been created equal, endowed by our creator. But in the United States, everybody wants to talk about how bad it was in the South. They won't come out and admit some of these things happened in the North as well.
I have been noticing that. It seems like each state has a checkered history, not just Mississippi.
All
I often talk
them.
About
even
Mississippi they have a checkered history. The each state have a checkered history.
Yeah, California, Oregon. I don't know about Washington, but I have a friend who's been living in Oregon since 1965, I think. And he was saying how black people had to live on a certain side of town. They really weren't wanted to be there, but they let blacks come up there because of the shipbuilding industry. And during the war, they needed people to work in the shipbuilding industry. So they were glad to get black people to work there. But after all that was over and black people were still living there, they were segregated too. And Chicago won't talk about the segregation that was there. And I remember the singer Lou Rawls, the late Lou Rawls, said he couldn't wait to leave Chicago. He said that was the most racist city in America.
Wow.
So,
yeah.
In New York,
I know when I have conversations with my friends from Chicago, they talk about, like what you were breaking down to me last week about racism and prejudice. They were like, it's not out in the open. But you feel it on the job. You feel it in the neighborhoods. They say the neighborhood. They tell me I've been to Chicago a couple of times, but you know just where I need to go and back. But I'm told how the neighborhoods are really segregated.
Oh yes, and I don't know what they mean. It's not in the open. Maybe they mean you don't see Jim Crow like white restroom or colored restroom. When that really wasn't necessary because there was no mingling of the races. In Mississippi, we talked about this before, we lived among whites, and whites lived among, there was no mingling or communication, so to speak, with the races, but we weren't as segregated in our neighborhoods as they were in the larger cities in the North. Those people may not have even seen a white person, so they can't address something they didn't experience. They said, well, I didn't experience prejudice. Well, I guess you didn't because you were only around your kind of people. And they had the cities designed so that you would only be around people of your race or ethnicity or whatever. Whereas in the South, with these plantations and things and little cities and communities sprang up, there was integration. In a manner of speaking, and I don't know, when I say integration, I don't mean we were going to white schools and vice versa, but we certainly came into contact with white people. But back on politicians, it was a couple of politicians who went into politics to do good, and they were like, you go in being a Christian, and if you don't remain a Christian, you're going to be crooked when you come out, because money talks. Because when these big donors start dangling dollar bills in front of your eyes, you will have a change of heart. You want to thank the constituency that sent you to office, that elected you, but we have human needs and human wants, and we see that every day. If you watch TMZ or Entertainment Tonight or whatever, you see so-and-so and so spent X number of dollars on this house. They paid $500,000 for a necklace and so-and-so and so. And the average person wants that, and if somebody is going to give it to you and afford you a lifestyle that you otherwise wouldn't be able to accomplish on your own, and all you have to do is take some money under the table and do certain favors, I guess it's just easy to do. And I used to always say, I can't be bought. No, you cannot buy my vote. You can't do this to me. Money won't change me. I never had anybody to offer to buy my vote or to try to influence me any kind of way with money.
Right.
So I like think I'm that strong that I wouldn't crack, but I don't know. I don't have a hungry baby to feed. I don't have a child that I want to go to a prestigious university. There's no certain neighborhood that I want to live in that I'm willing to compromise my beliefs and take money. So, you know, it's just a lot of different ways to look at things. But we certainly know that rich people in this country and probably around the world have influence that some of us don't.
Right, and that crossed the color line and party affiliation. If you're a leader, you have a certain privilege over the certain people. Wow. Wow. I'm that really makes us think too. Because we think, oh well, we're contributing to the world, and you're right. There's the creator. The creator created us equally, but some humans decided they wanted to play God. So,
And it's just not the recent 2 or 3 years history. This goes way, way, way back.
Right.
Since
the beginning of time. Right.
You had the kings and queens and serfs and people who were involved.
That's why I'm like, let's, talk about America and the world's elite. Because, yes, the dynasties, that's why I mentioned in America we have the corporations and what we call the American royal families, like the Kennedys and the Hiltons. The Waltons, they're the richest, but they are also considered like some of the most down-to-earth elite. That's what I always hear in my research and hear when watching stories about them, that they're elite, but they're humble.
I said down to earth by whose standards? What do you mean by down to earth?
Right.
You got millions of dollars worth of art, and if you get stopped by the police, the first thing you say is, do you know who I am? How dare you stop me? Now, from what I've read about Sam Walton, the father of the whole shebang, I've heard that I guess he would be what you would call down to earth, but not them offspring.
Right.
They may contribute to some charities or whatever, but I certainly wouldn't label them as down to earth.
Because I remember as a little girl, when he was still alive, and when Walmart really boomed up,
And I was seeing news reports of him. I'm like, wow. I mean, he just looked like a regular farmer, just a regular good old farmer guy.
Yeah, right. Kind of like Warren Buffett, even though he, for a long
right.
time, he was at the top of the list as far as America's billionaires, but he still lived what, by billionaire standards, modestly. Yeah, you don't hear, at least I don't hear anything about he was vacationing in whichever place on his $500 million yacht, and he bought a $2 million necklace at Sotheby's or Christie's or whatever. Now, I don't know what he's doing privately, but at least I didn't see anything about him flaunting wealth like that, even though he certainly
right.
could have.
Right. It might be something that he's like, he probably splurged his money on something that nerds do. You know, maybe books, his library might be extravagant, but it's for his own
yeah.
personal usage. It's not something for him to flaunt.
Yeah, unlike Jeff Bezos, who's out on his big yacht with his girlfriend, and they're jet setting here and there and what have you, and he's showing off his body, his abs. So yeah, everybody with money doesn't do that.
Right. Who do you consider some of our black elite families, like the Jackson, the Johnsons? Like
no.
But they're very quiet, though. The black elite families, to me, there's not
that.
Any that's really, like, that's really out there, you know.
I didn't think the Jacksons were elite. Maybe I don't understand the meaning of elite.
Uh-huh.
Do you mean moneyed black people? I don't know.
Money. Yeah, money, celebrity.
Okay, well, you know, the Jacksons didn't have a lot of money one while because they were riding off Michael. He was taking
right.
care
and,
of.
And Janet.
And Janet, yeah. She, I don't think she contributed as much as Michael did. But for a long time, he was having to foot the bill for those people.
Right.
What's his name? Byron Allen certainly has a lot of money, but I wouldn't consider him
yeah.
a black family. He's interracially married. Robert Johnson, the former owner of BET, probably
from
could
Mississippi,
have been that way, but he
right.
sold BET, and he and his wife got a divorce. So I don't know.
Ooh. And his wife, she's doing it big too with her own like resort. So
mm-hmm.
yeah.
I'm trying to think now, if you're talking about people who have money, Oprah Winfrey has a lot of money, and she likes to live the glamorous life, which she's entitled to. She earned it. I guess Jay and Beyonce, when you said celebrity.
Yeah, so I'm looking at a list. They say famous black families, but just because you're famous doesn't mean you're right, doesn't mean you're elite. And all elite families, that's what I'm thinking, are not famous. Yeah, I mean, your next door
right.
neighbor can be part of elite family and you not even know it.
Yeah. Yeah, I think those are two different categories, rich, elite.
Right.
I think of the Ivy Leaguers or the educated people with backgrounds that might have some kind of pedigree or something. But as far as just wealth, I mean, you've got rap artists and athletes who are filthy rich. But
right.
I don't consider them elite, and certainly not rap artists.
And I'm looking at a website now, Black Elite. Michael Jordan net worth. Michael Jordan was one of the first black billionaires.
I thought Oprah.
He was one of them.
Oh, you said
yeah,
one
Oprah,
of
Oprah. It says Michael Jordan, then Oprah. Michael Jordan was a billionaire before Oprah.
Okay, see, I don't know. She was the first one that I heard about, so maybe she was the first female, and maybe he was the first male. Now, Magic Johnson, from what I'm told, has quite a bit of wealth.
Oh, yeah, and that realtor, you heard of that realtor, R. Donahue Peeble? I was trying to think of his name, and I just pulled him up.
I've never heard of him.
Wow, I think I've tagged you before. I have to tag you again in the documentary that he's in.
Okay.
There's a documentary of him and also of many families in the Dallas-Fort Worth area. He lives in New York, though,
Oh, I was just going to say, when you tag me, if you could put it on Facebook rather than Messenger, because a lot of stuff I can't open if it comes through Messenger.
Uh-huh. Yeah, so it was on Facebook because I know one of my wealthy friends here has sent me the documentary before Tommy passed, and I know I sent it to you and Tommy because I always send you and Tommy the same thing.
When I get stuff in Messenger, I can't open it.
I did it on Facebook too, and I reposted often this documentary,
Tag me.
I know
on
you can't
Facebook,
open Messenger
because like
I can't always open Messenger. Yeah.
Yeah.
Because
I'll see the link and I'll click on it and nothing happens. And I might see an arrow or something and it'll pop up and go to Instagram or it'll go to like a steel TikTok or something. And I'm like, this is just wasted to me. It's just loading up Messenger and I'm not able to access it.
This is YouTube. This is a YouTube documentary. I know I sent it to you like a year and a half ago because Ardell Donahue Peebles and many couple businesses, African Americans, Black Americans in Dallas are featured. Also, this young lady based in Frisco with her skincare company and all. So I have to resend it to you. It's a documentary.
I saw her on some TV show. Uh-huh. I was flipping channels. I know is I was flipping channels, and I saw it was two black ladies here in Dallas. One was the one you're talking about in Frisco, because she was like hobnobbing and smoothing with other wealthy people, and the other black person was just more down to earth.
Oh.
And then they showed people in Atlanta. And Atlanta has, now you're talking about elite. Atlanta has had quite a few black elite families, like the former mayor and vice mayor, Maynard Jackson, his family. And he comes from or is related to what used to be the Dobbs Blackburn family in Jackson.
Uh-huh.
I would say they were elite. And you say you don't really watch Bell Collective, but the young Holly lady on there, the Holly family, I would say, would have been elite.
Oh,
now, we're not talking about
friends with the Holly. I don't have to watch Bell Collective to know about the Holly family because I'm friends with the Holly family. Yeah, and I grew up, me and Kevin grew up together. He lives in Hawaii now. But, I don't have to watch Bell Collective to know about the Holly family. And I know you went to school with the Holly family.
Well, yeah.
I don't watch Bell Collective. I only watched one episode, and that was one about 3 weeks ago.
Okay, but what I'm getting at is when you're saying elite, some of the families that we kind of looked at back then may have been elite, and that was the Hollies, because mainly they were teachers. And that's who we sort of, I guess you would put into the category.
My apologies, listeners, of Richard's Disposal, which I love and support. They're pulling up, and I usually have cold water out for them, and I need to get some water. So my apologies. they were outside, and they were looking for their water.
My mother used to give the waste disposal people cold water or soft drink.
And I do that, too. All right.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, they're gone now. because they were looking. It just so happened I heard something outside, and they were out there at the end of the driveway.
Mm-hmm.
And a good way to give them a big shout-out, too, Richard's Disposal. Yeah.
Okay. I'm finished. And what else are you talking about?
As you speak, I'm looking at you mentioned Robert Johnson, and he's a native. If many don't know, he's from Hickory, Mississippi, if I'm not mistaken.
Okay.
So, so he's mentioned. You sent me an article recently talking about Rosa Simmons, who I've always admired and inspired Culture Shock Entertainment to be similar to his business model. He had an amazing business model. So it's hard to believe that he is running out of money.
Well, yes, it's not hard to believe because of the foolish way he spent money when he and Kimora Lee were the it couple. He was being interviewed on something. They were interviewing wealthy black people, and he was showing the reporter, for lack of a better term, a catalog that was sent exclusively to rich, rich, rich people. I don't know if you've ever seen, you know, these little hourglasses with the sand in them?
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm about? Okay.
Yes, I know what you're talking about.
Okay, well, there was a company that sold hourglasses. I think they were like 3 or 4 minute hourglasses. And rather than having sand in them, they had diamonds in them. So I think I was looking at something like that and looking at maybe artworks, just stuff that only rich, rich, rich people would be able to purchase. And he was saying that he and Kimora like to purchase from that particular catalog. So that might be a nice thing to do if you have wealth that you don't have to worry about running out of. Nobody is not going to come take it from you. You don't have to worry about having to release an album or sell some clothes or whatever. That's people, in my opinion, who have unlimited wealth who would buy what I call trinkets, very expensive
mm-hmm.
trinkets. You know, rather than investing that money in something like gold, or if you're going to invest in diamonds, buy a rare diamond. If you're going to invest in art, get some super-duper rare art, something that has some kind of value. I mean, who wants to buy an hourglass with diamonds in it just to have it on your desk? And and forgive me for saying this, but a fool and his money are soon parted. When you spend foolishly and you've had to earn your wealth, it's very easy to lose it because you get caught up in buying flashy things. Because, see, white people have said about black people like shiny things. They like glitter and glitz. And they dangle that.
Right. Not funny, though, but right.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's true. You look at us and all the jewelry we'll have on us, and I'm saying, well, did you contribute anything to the black community? Did you get that from a black jeweler? I don't even think we have any jewelry designers who work with rare gems and big diamonds and whatever, like the Jewish community in New York or people who deal in diamonds overseas.
And these Arab jewelers that the rap artists, like you were saying, like the rap artists and get their jewelry made by. You make a good point. I never see those rap artists standing next to a black jeweler.
See the jeweler. It's somebody of another race, usually a Caucasian type background. And when we go pay $5 million for an automobile, well, who owns that dealership? I never hear about black people owning dealerships selling $5 million cars. And why would you pay $5 million? You know, that before. I've done, and people tell me in a hurry.
Some of my listeners do pay $5 million for a car when I need a car. But some of my listeners do. Yeah, they're driving around in Lambos now.
If you can afford it and you don't have to worry about losing your wealth, that's fine.
You know,
it'd be nice to contribute something to the black community, but you're right. People do what they want to do with their money. But all I'm saying is make some wise decisions. Do like Oprah. You know, she started out with a talk show and she bought a building. She was criticized for buying the building. And then she bought a condo, and then she bought a house in Indiana, and, you know, she was building something that has value and that will appreciate in value. Now, if you have a home with, say, 25-car garage and you have a fleet of rare, expensive vehicles, I might be able to see it. But what happens when, you know, if you're paying insurance on that vehicle and you lose whatever kind of income you have, and you say you pay cash for it, but you can't afford to pay the insurance on it, or you can't afford the repair. I just look at certain things differently, and it could be because I'm not a millionaire. You know, I'm not wealthy. And even if I were, I would not pay $5 million for a car, unless I was as rich as some Arab prince or whatever. That might appeal to me, because when I'm looking at these YouTube videos and looking at people in Saudi Arabia and the Emirates or whatever, and these are trillionaires. There's no way they're ever going to go broke, even if the income based on oil. It's just so much money that they could never spend it and definitely wouldn't lose it. So, yeah, I understand
from my research, it's the Al Saud family that's the richest.
Yeah,
one of the richest in the world that's over there.
Yeah. But, I mean, if you out here and you got to work, because when I was coming along, we looked at entertainers as having money. I looked at Sammy Davis Jr., as much money as he earned. He died broke. Somebody had just had to bury him. He didn't even have enough money to get buried. And so many of our entertainers went broke because they made bad investments. And when I say investments, I don't mean investing per se. It's the purchases. They bought flashy cars. Isaac Hayes was broke. And I remember when he first started making money, Jet Magazine was full of pictures of him. He had bought a Jaguar. He had bought one for his wife, and which was a lot of money at that time to spend on those kinds of vehicles. But you've got to continue to have record sales. And I guess it's, I'm living for the now or whatever. I don't know. But a lot of our entertainers and athletes have gone broke. And you said, what happened to all the money?
And people always will ask Prince why he stayed in Minneapolis, in Chan Hansen. You know, Prince lived simply. Mm-hmm. He flourished on his clothing and on his talent. Yes, on his guitars, on his instruments, on his studio. But he lived simply. Paisley Park was simple. You know, mm-hmm. His purple house was right next door. Mm-hmm. He lived a simple life. He splurged on things he needed, things that we loved about him. And then also he gave. Mm-hmm. He didn't give out on the spotlight. He gave secretly.
Yeah, and then when you look back at Michael Jackson, see, before he died, he was almost broke. His money pretty much now came from his death. But when Michael was living, I remember him, somebody had a camera following him around where he was in some gaudy-looking place, I'll take this, I'll take that, not looking at the price of anything. And, you know, he was trying to buy the bones of the elephant man, just all kind of crazy stuff. But he, I guess he said, well, you know, I earned this money. I'm going to spend it the way I want to, which is fine. But go invest in some expensive art. Go buy some expensive land. Develop some land. You know, real estate. That's where the money is. Something that's not going to, something that's not here today, gone tomorrow. And my mother used to always say diamonds. My mother used to say diamonds are an investment. I said the price of those diamonds are only as good as the price somebody is willing to pay you for them. You know, so you got a little $3,000 ring. You take it to the pawn shop, and when they say, "Oh, I'll lend you $300," you're like, but this is a $3,000 ring. Well, the price of gold today is so-and-so, and so this diamond ain't worth nothing, because the markup, when you go buy jewelry at a jewelry store, the markup is so high that there is really no value to it, per se. The only value is, like, sentimental, something that you love. You know, my fiancé gave me this, but there's no monetary, real monetary value. I paid I bought some 18 karat gold earrings in Dubai. And when I took them, because they didn't look like 18 karat gold to me, even though I had a certificate certifying that they were 18 karat gold. And I took them to the pawn shop and asked about the value of them. I mean, it was nowhere near what I paid. And I said, well, now I have a certificate here saying that this is 18 karat gold. And the guy told me, he said, yeah, they're 18-karat gold because, you know, they have a jeweler's loop and they can tell. And he said, yeah, it's 18-karat gold. Price of gold is so-and-so and so. This is jewelry. You know, if I need to sell this, I can't sell it for what you paid for. They're going to take this and melt it down. It's scrap. Now, you think my feelings weren't hurt?
Wow.
So that's all I'm saying is, If you got money, just purchase something that's going to be worth something. Like the Style of Prince that purchased that Leonardo da Vinci painting that he paid $450 million for. That's got value. It's only one in the world. It's super rare. Leonardo da Vinci been dead how many years? But don't go out and pay $1,000 for a gold necklace. So the person who can afford it probably is not going to buy it from you. They'll just go to Tiffany and get one, or Harry Winston or something.
Right. I'm looking at these lists of families, and then I'm looking at also the talk of the new elite, the ones that are at average age of 47 and they're self-made, the new elite of America. So we'll talk about the new elite of America and the world next week, because that's interesting too. The ones that are, we're talking a lot about old money and those that make the money, then lose the money, but then I seen a story yesterday on NBC, Lester Holt broadcast, about how San Francisco is now the new Simi Valley with the AI tech companies, Cousin Linda. AI tech companies are creating billionaires. Are we surprised?
No. So, I mean, Silicon Valley. That's where you got Facebook.
Yeah, Silicon.
Apple, right. And all these places. Yeah.
So now San Francisco, the downtown San Francisco, I didn't know it had been dying out, but it's been dying out. But they said that the AI tech companies, because some of the stores, like the type of stores that you and I like, the brick-and-mortar fashion stores, some of them have closed down and some are trying to hold on. And they were talking to some of the fashion stores down there, and they're trying to hold on because they said that they don't get the traffic from the business people anymore. But with these new AI tech companies, they're hoping that that change soon.
Well, you may not have seen it, but Governor Gavin Newsom decided to come up with this thing about shoplifting. If anything is $900 or less, we don't arrest the people. So you had these gangs.
That is crazy. I used to risk my life stopping shoplifters and warning them that you're going to, that's federal. If it's, oh, my God.
You had all these gangs going in, doing all these robberies. Breaking open the showcases and stealing jewelry, and they go in like Louis Vuitton or Fendi or some store and just take stuff off the rack and steal it, and nobody is going to be seeing them, and you don't know who it is because they're wearing hoodies, you know, they're disguised. And downtown San Francisco had just turned into a slum pretty much. Nordstrom closed, Walgreens closed, and several other businesses were closing because nobody wanted to go down there and be dealing with crazy, and forgive me for using that term, crazy, but dealing with a lot of homeless people and people who are not mentally stable. So that's why the businesses were moving to other areas. So San Francisco is not anywhere near what it used to be, because, I mean, I'd just be sitting here watching the news, and it was nothing that was going on. And people were mad at Governor Newsom for saying, why would you come up with this law where people can just walk in the stores? And, you know, it's spread across the country where people would just walk in and take everything they wanted and sell it on eBay. Stolen merchandise. You know, you're buying $700 sneakers for maybe $350, $450 because more than likely it's stolen. But it's brand new, but it's stolen because roving gangs, I think they call them. Well, they just go in and bust up the cases or just take racks and racks of merchandise off shelves and off tea stands.
Male and female, too. And they're like those flash mobs, like when, you know, when people just start dancing out of the blue.
Mm-hmm.
They would just start stealing out of the blue.
Mm-hmm. And they didn't have any fear of being arrested and going to jail. So, you know, if you're a criminal, it's open season. It's good times for you because you don't fear going to jail. You don't have to worry about paying a lawyer. You don't have to worry about going to prison. It's just like your backyard with fruit trees. Just go out there and pick all the fruit you want. So I think that was really a bad law. I don't know if they're going to change that, but $900, I don't even know how he arrived at that figure.
That is crazy. Because, I mean, we used to try to scare shoplifters by saying if you steal something over whatever, $700, $800, $900, that's a felony. And
now, look.
Wow.
So $50 used to be. Less than $50 was a misdemeanor. $50 and over was a felony. And stores used to have security that would try to apprehend shoplifters, and they would have signs that said shoplifters will be prosecuted. And once upon a time, they did prosecute shoplifters. And, you know, receiving stolen merchandise is a crime. But it's kind of like now we don't feel like being bothered. Okay, you want to steal it. Because your niece, I think when she was working at Family Dollar and say the shoplifters would come in with these big black garbage bags and just take all the stuff, walk out, and it's nothing you can do. And you know, as an employee, it's not your merchandise, so why worry about it?
Right.
And we've seen business owners on TV.
That's what shoplifters used to say to me. I had shoplifters to say that to me, too. Before, yeah, like this your stuff.
But they don't realize higher prices for other consumers because the retailer is going to pass that loss on to his customer.
Right.
But yeah, it might not be your merchandise, but I don't want to see people committing crimes. No, it's not my merchandise, but what makes you think that you have the privilege to come in and take something that doesn't belong to you?
And we don't, and price increases and then stores closing down. That's why we have so many neighborhoods too, like you just mentioned, downtown San Francisco. Oh my God. I mean, you know, I know it happens downtown Dallas too, but San Francisco, you wouldn't think of the downtown of wow. That's why businesses have to close down when they're losing and not making money, and they're losing.
Exactly.
And then pilferage, then with the employees stealing too. That's mm-hmm. bad enough.
And then that, you know, real estate prices for retailers, they're paying square footage. And because of location, the rent is going to be this, that, and the other. So there's a lot of cost involved, that overhead. And then you've got people coming in stealing your merchandise. Now, after that second or third insurance check, the insurance company is probably going to say, we no longer going to insure you. So the retailer has no choice but to go out of business or move to another location where they don't have to worry about crime like that. But you've got a lot
right.
of homeless people due to Silicon Valley. And that started way back. I remember when I was working for a company that had offices in San Francisco, and we talked to the employees out there all the time, and they were talking about how expensive the cost of living was. It was just getting outrageous. And once upon a time, you know, regular people could live in San Francisco proper. But the rent and the home prices just got outrageous. And I had a friend that lived there.
I hear so much about the cost of living there. Oh, my God.
Yeah.
Apartments cost, well, one bedroom. I thought New York
yeah.
was expensive. Oh, my God.
Well, my friend lived in what was like a house, but it had three apartments in it. It was a nice apartment because you could look through his kitchen window and see Alcatraz. Perfect location.
Oh,
and right,
right
there in Fisherman's Park. But his rent was, I think he was paying at the time maybe $1,000 a month or something, which was nowhere near expensive. And so I'm trying to figure out, how do you get off with paying that little amount of money? And he was saying the rent controls. They couldn't go up on rent. And he said the owner of the house or the building kept wanting to sell so he could tear that down and put up something more expensive. Now, I don't know. I hadn't heard from my friend
uh-huh.
since 2015. But I don't know. I mean, they probably have torn that building down now and really put up some expensive property. Yeah, because my friend, he used to be a bus driver, and then his dream job was being a cable car driver. And he got so badly injured on the cable car until he had to give up the job other reasons, where he could no longer do that job. But he probably, I don't know where he is now because we lost contact, but he probably is not living in
Fisherman's
Wharf.
And the show just concluded. I do my best to sign off the show. You can continue to talk, but it just concluded. I do my best so we can sign off, but we always wind it down perfectly. And I'm posting different lists of elite families and stuff. But continue, your friend what?
Oh, I was going to say, I'm sure he's no longer living in Fisherman's Wharf if he's still in San Francisco.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I wonder where is he now. I bet he lives somewhere interesting. Sounds like somebody that likes interesting places to live.
No, I was born and raised in San Francisco. That was his home.
Oh.
Like I said, he had been a bus driver, but his dream job
uh-huh.
was to be a cable car driver, and that's what he was doing. Was he was a cable car driver. He didn't have to have
wow.
a car or anything. Had a car when I first met him when he was driving the bus, but and working for Brinks as well. And then he finally got on. They had a position available for a cable car driver, and that's what he was doing. So he didn't have to have a car because, you know, when you work for the city like that, he had access to BART, that was Bay Area Rapid Transit, and the cable car and the bus and all that. So he really didn't need a car. And then he had to pay, I think, about $200 a month for a parking space that was not there at the residence where he lived. But things change. You see where they let all those people
in
full time.
Wow. And San Francisco has always been a city I wanted to visit. And one thing I want to do is ride a cable car. And I missed out on a trip with my Deccas. You know, I was a member of Deca in junior high and high school. And I know when I was at Callaway, my high school group did go to San Francisco. But I think I elected to school, work and school, work. But I wish I had gone on that field trip to San Francisco. And there's one thing that my teacher, Mrs. Gloria Traylor, I need to look her up. She wrote in my yearbook, you would have loved everything about San Francisco. But that was 85, 86, Cousin London. You say San Francisco is not the same. And my cousin was living out there, too, out there in Foster City. You visited them, didn't you?
I went to visit her. I stayed with her and her husband, yeah. And then the second time I went, I stayed with my friend David. And I got to ride the cable car. And you know how people like to hang on the side of the cable car?
Yeah.
In my opinion, that's extremely dangerous. Because I was hanging on the side of the car. And I was like, David, I can't take this. I'm scared. And so it was a lady sitting in one of the seats. And she said, well, you want my seat? And I said, yes. And she said she wanted to hang on the side of the cable car. So we exchanged seats. I took her seat, and she got my place out there hanging on the side of the cable car. I'm like, mm-mm, this ain't for me. Girl, if you happen to slip and fall off, Lord, no, mm-mm. And I thought that the cable cars were just for tourists, but it's actually transportation. People who live there, that's like catching the bus or the BART rail or whatever.
They jump on, jump off.
Mhm. But, I enjoyed San Francisco. I really loved it both times.
Because when I was a little girl, I loved watching Streets of San Francisco, and that was in the early 70s. That was like my toddler days. So that was one of my favorite shows that I got used to. So that's what built my fascination with San Francisco, because I love the scenery.
Well, the first I thought about San Francisco was Tony Bennett. I left my heart in San Francisco, and every now and then I see a movie filmed in San Francisco. Remember Steve McQueen's Bullet? I don't know if you ever saw Bullet. And I think the Thomas Crown Affair, there were a lot of things that were filmed in San Francisco. And so when I went, now Mary Elizabeth didn't really show me San Francisco. She did take me to Golden Gate Park. But now my friend David, he is the one that showed me San Francisco like a native. And you know when San Francisco would come on the beginning of the TV show and they would show all those different places, kind of like when Hawaii 5-0 comes on. Well, David showed me all of the spots. And I even had a picture of me. I had him take a picture of me coming down those steps. I think this place is called Big Al's or something. But it was at night, and you really can't see me that well. But I got some pictures here somewhere of me in San Francisco coming down those steps. That's on. I'm going to post that on Facebook, the intro.
Please
to the Streets of San Francisco.
Please do.
Yeah.
And tag me. Yep. Oh, yes.
Yeah.
And then in recent years, I guess like 10 years ago, 15 years ago, Don Johnson had to show Nash. Nash Bridges, and it was in San Francisco. Like, I love to watch Texas Ranger because of Dallas. Dallas been the star. So, but then also San Francisco, what about the fashion, Cousin Linda? I mean, San Francisco was supposed to be one of the fashion meccas, too, for the West Coast, Los Angeles and San Francisco, Dallas, New York, Miami. When you went, what about fashion?
I didn't pay that much attention to fashion in San Francisco. I was more concerned with the touristy stuff and the winery, because we went over to a winery.
Oh, yeah.
I didn't a tour, and we tried to get in with a tour group, but they just totally ignored us. But I did buy some California.
Oh.
And I don't really like I don't care for California wine, but because you can get them anywhere. But I just wanted to do the touristy thing. But, and I do have a picture of me at one of the wineries.
Okay.
And
yeah, I would love to visit a winery.
Yeah, and we went to Chinatown. Mary Elizabeth took me to Chinatown, which was no big deal. I've been to Hong Kong 6 times. So going to Chinatown, I was really disappointed in Chinatown because it's so small. But I used to have David shop there for me because I used to think that I had to have Korean red ginseng. And I couldn't find it here in
Dallas. Oh, yeah.
And it was a place over in
Arlington. Didn't you bring us a jar of Korean ginseng once?
I brought it to Diane. And she wouldn't drink it.
Oh, okay. I know somebody had.
I'm like, I done spent $40 for this. Because that was when her cancer had gotten so bad. And they were saying that, they were saying that this Korean red ginseng was supposed to be good for some of everything. And I thought it might help her cancer. And she said she didn't like
the taste
of it.
She did use it.
Okay,
I remember seeing that jar, and I remember seeing the ginseng and seeing that, and I know she said you had brought it. I knew it was one of them, but I remember that.
Well, I used to have it to me from San Francisco, and so when I got out there to Chinatown, I'm like, this is it? It's kind of small. I don't know why anybody would go there.
Small. Like Hollywood, I've been to California once, and my friends, we need to go back. I don't know if you visited Beverly Hills when you went, but I haven't been to Beverly Hills. I want to visit Beverly Hills. But when I see Hollywood, I'm like, this is Hollywood. it's so tiny. I was excited, but I thought it was like big. I thought it was big.
No, because in fact, David was supposed to meet me in Hollywood, but he called me, I think, about 3 days before I was supposed to leave to tell me about this accident he had had, and he wasn't going to be able to meet me because we were going to the Turner Classic Movie Film Festival, and he had sent me $800. He had sent me $800 to pay for it, and he had bought the full shebang. Because I think to go to all of the activities were $2,000. And I was like, I ain't got no $2,000. I got to pay for my hotel, and I got to pay for all this other kind of stuff. And so he said, well, I'm going to send you $800 because that was the smallest tour package for the Turner Classic Movie Festival. And I'm like, okay, I'll pay for my hotel. And, of course, hotel room rates at that time quadrupled in price. And so he was staying at the Roosevelt Hotel. I don't know if you're familiar with the Roosevelt Hotel. I mean,
I am very familiar with the Roosevelt Hotel, yes.
Okay, well, where he was
Did
going
you say
to
that?
Stay. No, he had to cancel the trip. I was there by myself. Mm. He was going to drive in Los Angeles. We were, he was going to rent a car. We were going to go see where Nicole and Ron Goldman had got killed. And we were going to ride. He used to take his little nieces and nephews to Los Angeles all the time. So he was going to show me all around. But he didn't show up. And so I'm there in Hollywood by myself. So I had to take some tours. And I wish I had known to take a TMZ tour. I took a tour from some old private.
God.
But I did get to go up to the Hollywood sign. You see the sign up there on the side, and I didn't realize it was that far up in the hills. And we did go to Beverly Hills, and they let you out to walk around Beverly Hills. I'm so scared if you're black that you're going to try to steal something. And I don't know. I've worked with people that said that they shopped in Beverly Hills, and I'm like, well, I didn't feel welcome. You know, when they were
You
did. No, it's kind of like, okay, well, I see a black person, and if she come in here, she going to steal something. So
oh, my God.
I didn't go in any of the stores because I didn't feel like I'd be welcome, and I knew I wasn't going to buy nothing no way, so it wasn't no point in me going in there wasting salespeople's time. But they did let us tour things to go and, you know, walk around and explore Beverly Hills.
I remember you went to Los Angeles maybe about 6 years ago, didn't you?
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Right. Oh, are you talking about that trip?
Yeah.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah.
Unbelievable.
Yeah. I went to some of the tourist stuff like Man's Chinese Theater, Sunset Strip, Hollywood Boulevard. Because I know when I got there, I was scared shitless because I don't do United States by myself. And so I was posting stuff on Facebook saying how scared I was. So my supervisor,
you would travel to the other side of the world by yourself, but not in the United States. That's scary.
That's what people don't understand. You are much more safe in those foreign countries than you are in the United States. I mean, I'm scared here in Dallas, Texas. Dallas is a dangerous city.
And I feel safer in Dallas than I do here, but I'm getting better. That says a lot about America, doesn't it, Cousin Linda? That says a lot about America.
The only place in America that I did not feel afraid was Honolulu, Hawaii, on the island of Oahu. And I had taken
and speaking of Holly,
a boat ride.
That's where Kevin Holly lives now, way over there.
Okay, well, I took a boat ride, and it was two white guys that had the boat, and they were the ones that were selling tickets for the ride. And one of the three people on there, it was two Asian people, a couple, and me. And I don't think they spoke English. But anyway, I was talking to these white guys, and I was telling them that I didn't feel like if I walked out of my hotel that somebody was going to conk me in the head or something. They said, well, where the criminals going to go? So they can't get off the island, and you just don't really have to be afraid here. And in other countries, their laws are so strict that you really don't have to worry about. And there's a huge police presence and stuff. So you really didn't have to worry overseas, but like in Chicago, New York, Dallas, Los Angeles. So anyway, what I'm saying is I was
New
scared
Orleans,
to get out. So
even Country Jackson. So I tell people in Country Jackson, when you come to Jackson, don't you think you're in the country?
you better
be aware of your surroundings.
Yeah, so when I was in Hollywood, and David wasn't there, and so I was posting on Facebook, well, I'm just going to spend my whole 4 days here in my hotel. I'm scared to go out. And so my supervisor say, no, go out and enjoy yourself. You'll be fine. And I'm like, I'm scared. I thought Hollywood was right next door to Los Angeles, and I'd heard about all them homeless people in
LA. I thought Hollywood was as big as Los Angeles.
No, it's tiny. So I had this friend in Florida, and he called me and asked me what was I doing. I said, I'm in my hotel room. I ain't going nowhere. He said, get out of that hotel room and go walking by yourself. He said, you're in Hollywood. You ain't got nothing to worry about. He said, Hollywood is not Los Angeles. So I left, and I was right there at Hollywood Boulevard. And I walked up and got child tourists everywhere, folks everywhere. Yeah, so I didn't have to worry. And a lot of the events for the Turner Classic
and
Movie
I just went from store to store, but that was way back in the 90s, early 90s. I just went from store to store and different sites and stuff and buying, you know, souvenirs and buying one of the Academy Awards Best Mom, and I don't know where it is now. I don't know what they did with my Best Mom Academy Award. That I was you talk about manifesting. I'm manifesting. I'll win one day. But now people fuss at the Academy Awards so much. Like, okay, do I? I win one of a film or something. If not for acting and makeup, my own documentary. But I don't know where my little souvenir is that I use as a visionary device to manifest one.
I bought a lot of T-shirts, and I didn't realize they were so small. I can't even wear the T-shirts
I found some rare print albums in a music store. I found a couple of rare print albums, like, you know, secret recordings and stuff. So
and
I thought that was a find in Hollywood.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, cuz I guess, and they probably have too with the prayer line, they might be off. I don't know. It's just going on.
They're not through. It's still early. You and I are getting up earlier than we thought. But Cousin Linda, that is a good idea, traveling Thursday. So after we finish this Elite Truth Thursday, that's what we should do, traveling Thursday.
Okay.
That's why I asked you for ideas.
Yeah.
So we can structure it.
Yeah, because I tagged you on those YouTube videos yesterday on Passport. I think it was last night I put them up. You didn't get them?
Ooh, I go to sleep early. So I better start checking your post. When I get up to pee, I better check to see. Because I'm thinking you go to sleep early, but I must go to sleep earlier than you.
If you look at my Facebook post, you see the reason I was up because Spectrum decided they were going to do some upgrading last night. Because I sleep with my TV in the bedroom on. And when my TV goes off, when the TV goes off, I wake up. And so I was like, okay, let me go over here and just turn it back on. And it wouldn't come on. I didn't have any pictures. So I got wide awake trying to troubleshoot and stuff. And so I came in here to the living room, and this TV was on, and I couldn't get a picture. So I went to, you know, several different channels, and I had to go to On Demand, and then On Demand came up, but then it went off. And I said, well, they probably doing some darn upgrades. So when I called Spectrum, I got a recording saying they apologized. But, yeah, they, you know, the recording talking about, well, we're doing upgrades in your area, blah, blah, blah. And I was like, and then by the time I got through doing all that, I was wide awake and could not go back to sleep. Because normally, honey, I can sleep through anything. And if I wake up, I still can go. If I get in the bed and turn the TV on, I'm going to sleep. But last night, honey, I had to wait for them to do all these doggone upgrades, and it just made me wide awake. And I saw Bethany talked about the, passport and the passport card, and I posted two videos on that.
Okay, well, I'll look, because I went to sleep. And but sometimes when you tag me out, it'll pop up. You know how notifications will pop up? It'll pop up and I will see it. So that's something that I understand what you say about tagging, because it will let you know, even if you're not online, but when you look on your phone, you can see where something has come through.
Facebook, you know, it'll show me how many notifications I have. But like I said, Messenger,
he used to say, you and Linda, that's what Tommy used to say. He's like, I might not be on Facebook, but I see you and Linda and my sister Joyce notifications. Y'all be on Facebook too much. They used to joke about us on Facebook. But look,
yeah,
he had his notifications on to see what we were doing.
Well, I think that's what he does, is monitor what I'm putting on Facebook. And, you know, I don't care. Don't really talk or communicate anymore or whatever. I didn't block him. But now people who really, you know, friends of mine, people I've been friends with for years, make some little nasty comments. I don't say anything. I just block. And I really have not wanted to block anybody, but when you come back at me real now for no reason, I just go in and block. I'm like, I'm not going to be doing this back and forth. So that's just it. And I'm sure people have blocked me probably because they didn't like something I said, and I certainly haven't tried to offend anybody.
Me too.
I post a lot of stuff, but I think what is interesting or funny to me is probably funny.
You tickled me when you were going to jail, so you stopped going to jail, huh? You tickled me, Facebook,
girl.
And Facebook, you and Jay. Remember Jay, my attorney? Jay, his name is John Deuce. When you see John, J-O-N, and the guy with the long hair, that's Jay. But you and Jay, you two tickled me. Y'all stay in jail.
I was going to ask you about Jay. I forgot all about him. Girl, every time I was going to tighten up, I couldn't hold it.
You have two of my two friends that stay in trouble.
I'm like, what did I say? And then when I posted something about Michael Jordan, I got the video straight from YouTube, and it was true. I forget what it was, but it was something about Michael Jordan, and it wasn't bad. And I don't know, it might have been he got married or divorced or what else? And then they were like, you have violated our policy and our rules. And I'm like,
and all this we see on Facebook, all this nakedness and profanity and nudity, and you and Jay stay in trouble.
And I was going to say, people cussing and carrying on, and we are going to limit you. You can't be on here for 48 hours and 24. I'm like, what do I do? Why am I being
You were disappearing from my feed. And I'm like, what's going on here?
Facebook. Yeah. I'm like, again? All I did, I did an article from Coast to Coast AM and posted on Facebook. Nah, that violates our rules and regulations.
If you post something about the UFOs, they might ban you, though, because this UFO subject is very controversial. So you're right. If you post something about the UFOs, they might put you in
jail. I got something from the Wall Street Journal or the Bible. They were putting me in Facebook jail. And like you
right.
said, everybody
Jay can post something like really spiritual. Because you and Jay are very blunt and very outspoken about your beliefs. but it's nothing to be going to jail for. But he can post something like spiritual, like a prayer. And he'll get banned.
Girl, I'm like, and I'll try to pull it up on my phone, and they be done block my phone, Facebook news. I'm like, what? How come all these other people ain't getting blocked? In Facebook jail.
And yeah, some people be having private parties as they profile pic, and I don't see them going to jail.
Yeah, and I'm like, my friends will be contacting me like, girl, you okay? I ain't seen you on Facebook in 2 or 3 days.
Right.
I'm going to Facebook jail, honey. They won't let me on there. And why are you in Facebook jail? You have to ask Facebook. I don't know. Well, what did they say? Like, they done told a lie, child, talking about I violated their policy. And ain't nobody else violated it but me.
It's this motivational speaker. When I first started posting him, that man named Dan Pena, and he cussed a lot, and he used profanity a lot, this billionaire man with a council that he'd like to make millionaires and billionaires. But when he went at his seminars, he curses like a sailor. And when I first started posting his videos, they put me in jail. I'm like, this is a motivational speaker, but yeah, he curses a lot. And I'm like, oh my goodness. That's how he motivates. but you and Jay, John Duke, that's Jay. But and you would see even his biggest profile pic is about him always being in jail. Facebook, yeah, but you two are the two that. Oh, well, what did they do? What did you?
Nothing. They just picked on certain
you're
people.
Right. You would disappear, and even sometimes people will ask me. My sister sometimes will ask, like, "Do you ever talk to Linda?" I'm like, "Yeah, I talk to her." But the couple times I remember, you said I've been in jail.
Yeah. I'm like, her friends call, girl, are you okay? I ain't seen you on Facebook. I know you ain't. I'm in Facebook jail. They won't let me post nothing.
And when they put us in jail is when you want to post the most.
Oh,
that was crazy, too. Like, I could go days without posting, but then they put you in jail. But, yeah, I wasn't because of Linda, too.
Nothing.
And it's political season getting stirred up, so there's going to be a lot of people going to jail. But you're still right. I don't block people and stuff, but when people be trying to boss your page and stuff, like you have your own page to boss. You don't have to even look at my page.
want to call you out your name in a nice way. And I'm like, I ain't arguing with these folks. I just click like and go on. And then he'll be mean and hateful. I'm like, okay, I'm just going to have to cut off communication with them because it's not worth me losing my religion and hating somebody and as insignificant as Facebook.
Right. Some people just just go overboard with it. But that is something. I'm like, what did y'all do? What did you do? What did Jay do? Lord have mercy. And I see far worse. Every day I see some craziness on Facebook. I'm like, I don't see these people getting in trouble.
Folks on there twerking and butts out and titties out and all kind of stuff, smoking marijuana. And I'm like, where is
some of the profile pictures pop up. I'm like, oh, wait a second, this is a profile picture. Sometimes I only want to see all that in a profile picture.
So I just have to try to be careful. Because I know sometimes when I'm trying to post a reply on some newspaper articles from Yahoo News is who it is. And when I put some information in the content, you have violated our privacy. We can't post that. You need to reword it. So I'm like, look at all these other folks down
here. I mean, Yahoo News, a comment should be able, you can have the freedom to comment whatever you want on a feedback. Oh, my God.
They didn't block me, but they refused to post one of my comments because I had the word ignorant in there. Ignorant is not a bad word. It means a lack of knowledge.
Right.
Because you're ignorant of so-and-so, and I couldn't send it, and so I got the little prompt, you know, you have violated our policy or whatever, and I changed ignorant to unaware of, and they let that go through.
Unaware to me is more offensive than ignorant. Because if somebody say, well, I guess you just unaware. they both are equal. I mean, if you consider them, there's no difference. I think I prefer ignorant than unaware.
Yeah, I chalked it up to whoever is monitoring this apparently has limited vocabularies. They don't know what they're doing, or either somebody has told them you need to reject X number of comments per day, and it's just my time to get rejected or something. I don't know what it is, because I'm not sure what they do.
And that offends me when I can't post my comment, especially like you were saying on a public paper or a talk show. I mean, that's what you want, people to comment.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I get offended, too.
Mm-hmm.
And then sometimes they say, well, this person or this show can only, they have it, like, set so they can only accept a certain number of comments or something.
Well, they be accepting 5,000 and 6,000 and stuff, look like to me. So
right,
like,
then
okay.
When it's time for mine, I noticed that too. Then it's time for mine, it's rejected. It's like, what about the others that were ahead?
And you better not say nothing about Melania Trump or Donald Trump unless it's flattering.
I'm glad you mentioned that because I wanted to bring that up when we were live on air. Because yesterday on The View, Whoopi Goldberg made a good point. And because they were, her co-hosts were all talking about how the polls and how Donald Trump leading in the polls. And then Whoopi was like, who have they polled? Who have they talked to? Anybody, have they called any of us, any of you, audience members? Have anybody called you the girl that's a Republican at the end of the table, the newest girl? She was just, her mouth just dropped. And she was like, Republicans, have they called you? They haven't called me, Cousin Linda. I'm like, Whoopi, you got a good point. Because who have they talked to say they want to see Donald Trump back in office? You know, they sure ain't asked me. They haven't asked me. I voted for him. I'm voting for Biden this time, or Pence. Well, I don't understand
reporters who won't ask detailed questions. They'll ask a politician something. Well, I'm going to do this and I'm going to do that, and they never follow up and say, well, explain or tell me how are you going to do so and so and so. Just because that was like Donald Trump out there talking about, I'm going to build a big, beautiful wall, and I'm going to make Mexico pay for the wall. And nobody ever asked him, how are you going to make Mexico pay for the wall? And all this other stuff. And I'm like, Donald Trump, president, you can't wave a magic wand and say, this is it. No.
Right.
But people
just go ahead
and act like just because he said it, it's so. No, that is not true. And reporters on ABC, CBS, and NBC.
Yeah, we're talking about reputable news sources. Reputable news sources are reporting that, such percentage of us are saying that he's going to get the nomination, and he's going to win. And Whoopi was like, well, who? Even you Republicans, who have he called interviews? They ain't called me, the audience members, her panel. Who are they talking to?
Well, a lot of times it's a survey online, because you have companies that are researching and they do surveys. Because I used to do surveys for
surveys. I haven't gotten any of those surveys. Will you vote for Trump again, or do you think he should be the nominee?
No, I used to do surveys for a company. That's all they did was surveys.
Oh, right.
And I would by email every day, and you get paid for these little surveys. I mean, you don't get paid, but I think like a penny.
Right.
Uh-huh. I think we got a penny per survey, and I was making some little decent money. But they would ask you about who are you voting for, and do you agree with this, agree with that? And when it came down to an election, you know, they'd have Joe Biden. How do you feel about Joe Biden? Do you like him very much, or do you disagree with him? Blah, 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 and what's her name, Kamala Harris, and all these other people. So I said, well, maybe they're no longer doing phone calls, because people got a robocaller killer and all this other stuff, and people don't respond to their phones like they used to. So a lot of this is online. Mm-hmm. But I found myself getting the same surveys over and over and over again. And I'm like, how many companies are doing these surveys? Because they're asking me the same stuff. They ask you for your demographic information. How do you feel about this? If the election were held today, who would you vote for? So I said, well, and people say, well, they didn't call me. It's probably a survey online. Because I really don't think Nielsen or whoever else used to do those phone calls and stuff, I don't think they do that anymore. But so many people don't answer those calls, and you got Robo Killer. Somebody called me this morning, who I have called in the past, and so they sent me a text message and say, when I called you, your phone went straight to voicemail. And I know when I was subbing at one of the schools, and the principal was trying to contact me, and she told me, this all when I try to call you, your phone goes straight to voicemail. I said, and why it does that, I don't know, but it's an unrecognized number. So I have to key that number in and put it into my contact list. Otherwise, I won't get the call. And I missed all kind of real calls because my phone.
Me too.
Some kind of, my phone, I forget what you call it, clears them out automatically. And I know I didn't program that.
Oh, I need to put that on there to get the robot calls off.
But yeah, my phone won't even ring. It goes straight to voicemail.
Okay. Well, let's try to catch the end of prayer line. You're right. Look, we were getting ready to hang up at 12:30. Now it's almost 1.
Okay. Well, I'll go ahead and call prayer line.
Okay, and to tomorrow at 4, because you watch the Hawaii 5-0 at 11. Tomorrow at 4, Fun Friday. But you're right, we'll change after next Thursday, we'll change it to Traveling Thursday. That is nice.
Okay. All right.
Okay.
Prayer line.
Okay. Thank you. Love you. Okay. Prayers.
You love you. Uh-huh. Bye-bye.
Okay.